Episode 63, Patrick and Cyprian speak with Ulf Mattsson, Chief Security Strategist at Protegrity. The team discuss post-quantum cryptography, the need to roadmap randomness, and homomorphic encryption. Welcome to Entangled Things, your quantum computing podcast, hosted by Patrick and Cyprian.
Hi, Cyprian. How are you doing today?
Hi, Patrick. I'm doing well. And as usual, looking forward for a great episode of Entangled Things.
I don't think you'll be disappointed, but you're in a wonderful location. Are you off on vacation right now?
I'm in the beautiful Greek island of Corfu, where I'm planning to spend the next 10 days. It's not going to be vacation only. I'm going to work.
Yes, evidenced by the fact that you're on the podcast.
What best way to start this amazing week than by doing the Entangled Things podcast?
Well, we're very blessed to have Ulf join us. Could you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, I'm pleased to be here. And my background is physics and quantum physics. So I have a master in physics from the university. And I'm very excited about physics and quantum physics.
Well, you're at the right place then.
Thank you. In a good team here, a good crowd. So then I went to IBM for 20 years before I got out. And most recently, and then I founded a security company. My first book was available at the RSA conference bookstore. And in that book, I talk about some of the book is covering quantum computing and other related topics.
Excellent. So I'm looking forward very much to talking to you about this because I'm also in the security field and Cyprian's no slouch as well. But you know, you're very deep into like the problem of how do we get out of this problem of the fact that RSA is about to go away? Now, that's a very fraught thing to say. It's probably not going away tomorrow, and we, you know, no one's broken a significant RSA with a quantum computer, but we see the path, we see the tracks. What's your take on how long we might have and what we need to be doing?
Yeah, you know, it may not happen tomorrow, but to upgrade our computer systems will take time, mm-hmm. a lot of time. So I remember back in year 2000, IBM and MIT, they had a very small quantum computing capability. They had like 10 qubits. A qubit is a quantum bit that is kind of the power of the quantum computer. Then MIT went up to around 100 qubits in 2006. And we had companies like D-Wave that came out with interesting platforms. Mm-hmm. Then in 2018, IBM advanced up to around 400 qubits, and it started to take off. So in 2022, we are seeing post-quantum cryptography, where NIST is qualifying, validating different algorithms that can be useful and resistant. Mm-hmm. A start of, I would say, a hockey stick. Mm. So in 2020, we see a lot of meaningful business applications. Maybe it will come in 2023, 2024, where you actually can use quantum computing for business purposes. And that's very exciting. Mm-hmm. On a positive note. And then on the scary part, some predictions are that in 2028 timeframe, the RSA algorithm will no longer be used for PKI. And also ECC elliptic curve. Mm-hmm. So these public key cryptography, they are used everywhere, internet and so on. And we can talk a little bit about what will be impacted, including blockchain.
Yes.
And some predictions are that in around 2030, RSA algorithm will be cracked.
The 2048 level.
Yeah, that is when you reach up to 2,000 qubits. And
logical qubits. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just that there's physical qubits and there's logical qubits. You're talking about logical qubits. When we get stable qubits, it's only a few thousand that are needed, but the error rates are basically holding us back right now.
Yeah. Okay. So error correction is a key aspect to be more powerful. So some predictions are that to have a meaningful business use, you need around 1,000 qubits. And to crack the RSA algorithm, you need more than 2,000 qubits. Those are some predictions.
So this is a pet project for me. I've spent a lot of time looking at this. I've read a lot of papers about optimizing Shor's algorithm to use fewer bits to recycle qubits. And I'm kind of coming in around three times the key size is of stable logical qubits that we would need. So I think it's about 6,000 to break RSA 2048. And it's just it's a wild guess to some extent, but it's an informed wild guess. One thing that's very interesting that you may have noticed is back in 2015, there was a paper that said it would take a billion physical qubits to break RSA 2048. But four short years later, there was a new study that found that they could do it in 20 million. And I think most of the difference was they figured out the error correction started getting better over those 4 years, and they figured out more efficient ways to use fewer qubits. Are we still on that curve, do you think? Do you think we're still, we're getting more qubits and we're getting better at the error correction?
Yeah, I tend to call it the scary curve because it's moving, and we know that we should pay attention and start planning. And we just talked about the RSA and asymmetric algorithms here. Mm-hmm. But I think we should remember two things, that historical data that is stored using the RSA algorithm will be exposed.
Right.
So not just that we need to upgrade the internet and other systems that are using the RSA algorithm, but we should think about historical data also.
Yeah, there's definitely, so my background's military, and there's definitely chatter in the circles and evidence that some of the big powers who remain nameless, and everybody knows who I'm talking about, have been storing for future crypto breaking with quantum computers data that they have no hope of decrypting now. But the hope for them is that later on, and some secrets will only last a day, and some secrets need to last for a lifetime.
Yeah, it's a ticking time bomb. So that's a scary part, and it comes back to you need to start planning now.
Right.
I get the question a lot about is it just asymmetric algorithms, and the answer is kind of. If you are using AES or triple DES or any block cipher, the quantum computer can try a lot of encryption keys very fast. Mm. So what you need to do is you don't need to change the algorithm in that case, but you need to start using longer key sizes.
Yeah.
And you know, when we talk about replacing the RSA algorithm, we know that NIST, National Institute for Standards and Technology in US, is the leader in studying new algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
And for one leader, leading candidate is to be resistant is the lattice-based algorithm.
Yes.
So,
my understanding is crystals, Kyber, and Eleutherium are pretty much the standard if you wanted to pick one technology that would cover key encapsulation as well as signing.
Yeah, yeah.
But that seems to be putting all of our eggs in a new basket.
Yeah. So you have a couple of algorithms that are frequently studied. We have more than 100 articles scrutinizing the lattice-based algorithm. We have about 100 articles scrutinizing the ISO-GEN, and a little bit fewer on code and multivariate. So they're getting a lot of attention. And why I'm very excited about lattice is that it applies to, for example, homomorphic encryption also.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So there's a synergy.
So homomorphic encryption is not doomed by the quantum revolution. It's just going to change just like asymmetric encryption.
Yes. If you're using a good algorithm, you are pretty safe. But I think homomorphic encryption, from a security point of view, is a big question mark. The general security level, if you are applying homomorphic encryption, fully homomorphic encryption, that can provide support for all kind of different operations, then the big question mark is that maybe you are actually disclosing too much about your data.
For the audience, some of them are going to be very much following along with some of our audience's students and new people. I do want to say, and I want you to verify this, homomorphic encryption is encryption that allows you to do analysis and data statistical analysis on the data without decrypting it. Is that a fair definition?
Yes, but also very exciting is that you can do operations. You can multiply to encrypted fields or add to encrypted fields.
And it stays encrypted. So that this lets cloud providers and third parties do their stuff without ever seeing the result.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
The fully homomorphic encryption is, I think, a pipe dream. When you look at it, a more practical implementation that we actually can use today is a partial homomorphic encryption, and there are variants, meaning that you can allow certain operations, but not all operations. You may be able to multiply, or you may be able to add fields, and it can be pretty fast and pretty secure, but it's very far from fully homomorphic.
There's limitations. Yeah, we're used to that. That seems like every time we pick something, there's trade-offs that we have to deal with.
In fact, Patrick, one of the areas where we start also exploring the use of homomorphic encryption is in AI and machine learning.
Interesting.
Especially in cases where the data scientists are not allowed, not even for training the machine learning models, they're not allowed to see the original data. And there are applications where, as Ulf mentioned, partial homomorphic encryption actually can solve that problem as well.
I did not know that was part of the AI spectrum, but I guess everything's AI in some way, shape, or form.
But you mentioned about the symmetric and asymmetric encryption. One other interesting topic about the potential threat of quantum is on the hashing algorithms, right? That's another interesting discussion, because that leads into that whole other world of blockchain, right? Where there is like extensive discussion of how safe are hashing functions from like brute force attacks that you could do with, say, the next incarnation of a Grover algorithm or whatever, supposing you have 10,000 qubits. And what are the consequences there, right? That's another very interesting area for me that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. When you bring up you brought up machine learning and AI, we should note that some machine learning algorithms can be very effective when using quantum computing, not just because of the power, but the way the algorithm actually can be improved in performance by using quantum. The second part that you brought up is blockchain. And we know blockchain is very reliant on asymmetric encryption. So blockchain is one area where we should watch out. A lot of financial data could be exposed in that. When we go a little bit more towards security issues, we talked about lattice-based encryption. For example, NTRU, which is an open source homomorphic encryption. And then when we go into, we talked about TLS, SSL, and protocols that are using the RSA. That's a scary project to replace the internet.
So I've heard a lot of people mention NTRU still, but it's fallen out of the NIST recommendations. Did it fall out of the NIST recommendations for a reason that doesn't really disqualify it from use, or is it? Am I missing something?
I think for different use cases, you can consider algorithms like NTRU, Sabre, maybe NTRU Prime with a little bit lower security level, or Q Tesla.
It's still usable.
Yeah, but if you look at high security level, the highest, my view is that NTRU and Sabre, it's a moving field, and I think lattice based encryption is so very useful. So I'm looking mainly at lattice-based algorithms for different purposes.
Yes, I agree. So it's my understanding that if the crypto world were to get to post-quantum encryption before quantum computers are able to rampantly break their stuff, they're okay. They don't have that tail the way military secrets do. Or do they? Is there something about the old blockchain that you're reading?
Have one big tail, Patrick, which is the ledger.
Well, being able to decrypt the ledger isn't the same as being able to change it, is it?
Well, the ledger is not encrypted, just to be clear, right?
Right.
Right. The ledger is out there. The ledger is signed.
Right.
That's a different story.
Oh, the signing. Right? Okay.
Yeah. And so... like the big question always is the forking, right?
Yeah.
How can you go back in time, fork the ledger, and end up creating an alternate reality? That's the big problem.
Wouldn't you need to control over half the nodes in order to do that?
No. You don't need to take over.
Oh.
The blockchain. You just need to get the data and crack it.
Because you're cracking the wallets, or you're cracking...
The 50 plus one problem is of you taking like full control of the ledger from the current point in time.
Right.
Right. And that's why one of the big kind of concerns are in terms of the concentration of mining power. Like, is it
in
really
one country?
Like not concentrated, or it is concentrated, but like, as Wolf mentioned, the problem is not that, right? That's a different story. The problem is cracking the thing. It could have some dire consequences.
So over time, that's a problem with potential cracking. Based on cracking asymmetric algorithms. When you mention the wallet, I think FBI cracked the wallet for one criminal organization by just getting into the secrets in the wallet. So that's another dimension. That is about attacking a computer system.
Right. Right. Okay, if we suddenly had a 1 million perfect qubit system and all of crypto has switched over by then, does that mean it's still doomed? Or is it can they do things to protect them from their past use of crypto, of quantum vulnerable? I'm not a big crypto guy. I bought some in the early days and did pretty well, but I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, Is this doom and gloom, or is this just a warning to that you need to get their act together before it's too late? Which is exactly what we're saying to the military.
Yeah, historical data will always be a problem. Mm. Quantum computers, will be able to crack asymmetric algorithms. Then I get the question about block ciphers like AES. And that is different because that is just trying out all possible encryption keys. So if you have a big enough key space, long enough encryption keys, you can withstand a quantum attack if you keep up over time with the longer and longer encryption key. So it's kind of easy. Just stay with the block cipher like AES and continuously increase the encryption key size. Then you're pretty good.
Mm. But we're not used to that. We've had 30 plus years of stability in how we implement encryption with very modest increases in key size over time. This sounds like it would be massive increases in key size as we got to 1 million, 1 billion qubits. That's an arms race that I wouldn't want to have to fight.
Right. And you know, it's quantum computers can do it faster and faster. And when that speed increases, you equally need to increase the AES key size.
So I do have a question. So, you know, we're making some assumptions, some really big assumptions. And one of them is that as we get more qubits, we're going to be able to do bigger and bigger entanglements. So, I mean, we've shown that we can entangle dozens, if not maybe even hundreds of qubits. But is there any reason as a physicist that you think we might run into a roadblock where once we get to a million qubits, we can't really entangle more than those simultaneously? Or is that a well-established, we know what we're going to be able to do, and with different modalities, we'll be able to keep entangling larger and larger strings?
I think it's interesting, but I do not want to get into a discussion about quantum physics.
Okay, that's a rabbit hole, we understand. And we only have about another 15, 20 minutes, so I understand.
Yeah.
Let's get into the discussion about the quantum physics. What I would, because you mentioned several times of the term like danger, right? Or and I would like to maybe get your take on, and this is something Patrick and I have covered and many others are covering, right? The dangers are real, the opportunities are real, but at the same time, I believe quantum computing has to deal with something else that is quite damaging, which is hype, right? We see, unfortunately, in the media mostly, a lot of things which are totally untrue about quantum computing. So what is your take, especially given that you are someone with a very solid background in the kind of underlying thing that is helped to build quantum computers, which is quantum physics? Where do you think this is right now in terms of having a lot of hype? I was looking, for instance, at companies who were like considered maybe a year ago very promising startups in quantum computing. They were listed at the stock exchange. Now they're really, really struggling to not be delisted from the stock exchange. Are we about to get into a quantum winter here because of the hype?
You know, hype is always there. If you look at any security technology and go to the RSA conference, you see a lot of hype. So you need to dig deeper, I think, go beyond the marketing language and look at research and see what they predict. Sometimes there is a breakthrough in capabilities, error correction and using different algorithms and so on. So you need to follow those, I would say, real events, studies. But you still have marketing people that promote different companies and having quantum computing company is kind of exciting topic for many people. But don't listen too much to the marketing.
That's true. Although the marketing can be quite loud and quite persistent. So that's why we need shows like this and guests like you. So we're coming up on a half an hour. We still got a good amount of time, but we need to pick our topics wisely. What would you want to continue to talk about for the rest of the time we have? It's been a great conversation so far.
Yeah, I think when you have different computer systems, we talked about symmetric, like AES. We talked about homomorphic encryption. We talked about asymmetric PKI, public key crypto systems. And we touched a little bit on hash, like SHA. And they, if we go backwards here and start with hash, like SHA, look at key sizes. And we also have, when we talk about asymmetric PKI, we have, for example, Diffie-Hellman, key negotiation. You could look at super singular elliptic curve, like isogen, in that area. We talked about RSA and DSA for signing, where you could look at hash-based algorithms like Lamport, Merkel, and Sphinx. When we talk about code-based crypto, and it includes cryptographic systems that are relying on error correction codes, such as MCI, and there are different areas. So post-quantum crypto is not one thing. You need to look at your use cases. What algorithms are you using? Another aspect of asymmetric PKI is the multivariate crypto, like Rainbow. If you are using homomorphic encryption, you may want to focus in on, as we mentioned earlier, lattice-based encryption, not just N-True, but Bliss and GGH. And the easy part here that people are asking about is the symmetric. And as we said, it's all about key sizes. So it's pretty practical to increase the key size.
So I think the message being, based on what you just said, is we've been spoiled with RSA and elliptical curve that there were very few options that did a lot of things. And that's not the case with these new algorithms. You're going to have to choose your own adventure by choosing the right or the best fit algorithm. And it's not going to be the same all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at planning, I am emphasized you need to plan ahead of time. So you need to create a short term, medium term, and long term. And short term, you can do things like longer key sizes and go up to SHA-512 for hashing, for example, and start going up to AES-256 for as a baseline for symmetric key. Then in the medium term, you should look at what NIST is proposing. There's a review of quantum safe algorithms from last year, and we are waiting for a standard from NIST. And long term, you should think about how will this impact analytics and machine learning. And some predictions are that full industry adoption will happen many years from now. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And I think it's an interesting thing that NIST released in April this year is they have a draft post-quantum encryption document that I think people should read to get the latest information. And then NIST, they in April 2021, in April, NIST came out with a good white paper. The name of it is Getting Ready for Post-Quantum Crypto. So a lot of good reading in those documents.
Yes.
And also, we have the NIST special publication. The name of it is 1800-38A. And the title is Migration to Post-Quantum Crypto, a preparation for considering implementation and adoption of quantum safe crypto. And this one is from April of this year. It's very good reading if you have a lot of questions and different people are saying different things. I would say go back to NIST because they have a solid foundation.
Yes. In this field. Your company, Protegrity, what do you focus on? I assume that you help organizations with this transition or with parts of this transition.
Yeah. So I'm on the advisory board for a couple of companies, including banks, larger banks. And they raise a lot of questions in this area. But they also ask, what can they do for machine learning and other aspects of crypto? I think it's very important to have those kind of discussions in kind of a little bit futuristic in these and related areas. And it's important to bring that up to a board level.
Yes.
Make them aware what's actually happening and what to prepare for.
So they either have to disrupt or be disrupted.
Right.
When talking about post-quantum cryptography, right, there's another interesting topic that actually I believe starts to get workable and tangible results faster than the computing part, which is the quantum communications part. So I'd really like to see, like, from your point of view, Ulf, where does, like, something like, for instance, quantum key distribution stand in this landscape? Because quantum is not about just the threat to destroy security and cryptography, it also has like a very a significant potential in terms of creating very, very powerful approaches for example, for key exchanges, right?
Yeah, I agree that. And one of the leading companies is QLab, Quintessential Lab in Australia. And their customers are mainly governments and some banks, where they actually do a quantum-based key exchange. And the interesting aspect of that is that if you try to listen to the communication, you cannot hide. You will change the communication information if you just try to listen to what's going on in the key exchange. So that's interesting.
And they will know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, then you know about it. You may need to have special communication links and fiber and so, but it's, I think over time it will be very interesting. There's practical use of it right now. So you don't need to wait for anything. But it could be a heavy investment.
Yeah, those existing endpoints that currently are available on the market, they are in the multi-hundreds of thousands of dollars, which, like, compared to your regular network devices, even the expensive ones, is like an order of magnitude more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So currently it's mainly for government use.
Yeah. Well, and we've enjoyed a lot of government support because of the threat. I think because of the threat, not just the promise. Governments tend to invest more in fear than in inspiration. And so,
as you say, Patrick, the threat to RSA is probably the best thing that could have happened to quantum computing, right?
Yeah, very much so. I think it's probably produced most of the funding in one way or another. So we're running low on time. It's been a great discussion. Is there anything else that you would like to highlight or bring up before we bring this great discussion to a close?
Yeah. Don't wait. Start your planning, because it will be very hard to do the upgrades that you probably need to do.
Yeah.
And it will take time.
It's not a forklift thing. You're going to have to think it through, and there's lots of trade-offs, and it's new technology. So I think that's the best advice you could give. Well, thank you for joining us. As always, it's great to see you too, Cyprian. And thanks to everybody who joined us. And we'll see you next time on Entangled Things.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.